Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. The United Nations mission in South Sudan hands over a camp for internally displaced persons to the government of South Sudan.
Today we don't have IO and IG fighting. We went through some rapprochement even at the political level, but also at community level we are pushing for this community rapprochement.
And authorities in South Sudan are calling on the international community to support Sudan's comprehensive peace agreement.
That need also the efforts of the international community to support the process so that the inclusive aspects maintain itself for this peaceful Sudan for transition.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan has handed over a protection of civilian site in Bor to the Jonglei state government. IDPs in Bor are protesting the UN's decision, saying more than 3,500 families could be vulnerable to attacks by armed criminals. A UN official in Bor says the decision to hand over the camp was prompted by progress in the implementation of South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
The Memorandum of Understanding seen by South Sudan in Focus was signed by UNMISS boss David Shearer and Jonglei State Governor Dinei Jok Chagor. Bur Ajang Duot, the head of delegation Jonglei State Governor Chagor sent from Juba to Bor to explain the MOU to the IDPs, says the state is ready to protect the camp's occupants.
They want more assurances, but we believe that they are there. You know, we told them that, you know, they are going now to the town, and the people, you know, the local people, they are, you know, they are very normal. There is no any fighting, there is no any, you know, people are not aggressive.
UNMISS, acting head of the UNMISS field office in Bor, Isidore Bushwe, says the decision to transfer the security mandate to Jonglei authorities was prompted by some progress made in implementing the peace deal. Bushwe says the site can remain as a normal IDP camp like other camps across the country.
Today we don't have IO and IG fighting. We went through some rapprochement even at the political level, but also at community level we are pushing for this community rapprochement.
Bushwe says the government will take charge security while UNMISS takes a back seat to security operations at the camp.
We also have on standby a quick reaction force that can intervene in 15 minutes. We have also in place our police, the UNPOL, at the access point, and have also the formation of the police patrolling and ready to assist the people in the POC. So it's not like we are leaving the POC unprotected.
Makwach Munkem, chairman of the internally displaced person living at the UN-run site in Bor, says thousands of IDPs protested against the change, saying they do not feel safe.
We are here because in 2014 we was attacked, and 147 was killed. And the woman and widow men are here, and the children also. That the relative and father and mother was killed. And outside there is no unified force that can protect us. Who if we go out? Who will protect us? The world, there is no unity government. There is no deployment of unified force.
Munkem says the parties have done little to implement Chapter 2 of peace deal regarding security arrangements. He says IDPs are skeptical about how state authorities will protect civilians without unified security forces as provided for in the peace agreement. Munkem also worries that women and girls who leave the camp to collect firewood will not be protected. UNMISS boss Shearer announced earlier this month that UNMISS withdrew its peacekeeping force from POC site in Bor and Wau, saying the security situation had improved and IDPs could return home. The revitalized peace deal signed 2 years ago has yet to be fully implemented. Critical tasks like training and the unification of government and opposition forces has yet to materialize. The national legislature also has yet to be reconstituted, and state government structures have yet to be established. After a session on South Sudan peace process in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa last week, the African Union's Peace and Security Council urged the parties to accelerate implementation of all outstanding tasks through a commitment to the spirit of consensus building and constructive dialogue. For VOA News, I am Dengaiding, reporting from Bor.
Authorities in South Sudan are appealing to the international community to support the implementation of Sudan's comprehensive peace agreement signed in Juba between the Sudanese transitional government and rebel groups. The officials are also appealing to the international community to mobilize funds to rebuild Sudan and facilitate the voluntary return of refugees. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
In a briefing to foreign envoys in Juba on Monday, South Sudan Deputy Defense Minister Malek Ruben Riak said implementing the Sudan peace deal will be challenging because of the two rebel holdout groups who are standing firm in their opposition to the deal.
As many of you are aware, the absence of the Sudanese People Liberation Movement led by Abdelaziz Adam Al-Hilo and then the Sudan Liberation Movement led by Abdelwahid Mohamed Al-Nur remain a challenge. That needs also the efforts of the international community to support the process such that the inclusive aspects maintain itself for the peaceful Sudan for transition.
Riak also asked the international community to encourage Abdel Wahid's faction to join the peace process. He says reaching a comprehensive political settlement in Sudan is a matter of necessity, adding that mediators are working to bring the SPLM-NOS faction led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilo back to the negotiating table for separate talks in Juba, which could start as early as next month. The group signed a declaration of principles with the Sudan government and agreed to hold peace talks. Riak called on the international community to step up its support of the deal, saying there cannot be a military solution to the conflict in various parts of Sudan.
The mediation also seeks your generous support on the implementation of the agreement and for you to help engage your government and leaders of the various multilateral institutions to ensure this strategy of the group, Sudan Liberation Movement of the Wahid, to join the political process.
Deng Dao Deng, South Sudan's Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs, specifically asked the international community to provide funding to help reconstruct Sudan after years of fighting.
The peace implementation, of course, would require financial and expertise to undertake the rehabilitation, reconstruction of the physically and social infrastructure damaged during the war. And so the spirit of this meeting and the spirit of this briefing is that our ambassadors in Juba can now take the message for them to be able to inform their capital of the process that the peace will be signed come 3rd of October in Juba.
South Sudan hosted approximately 150,000 Sudanese refugees in Unity State, Mabane County. Most of the refugees are from the Blue Nile region, according to data from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. DAO also urged international partners to fund the voluntary repatriation of Sudanese refugees living in South Sudan and other neighboring countries.
We in South Sudan, we are hosting a very large Sudanese population as refugees. And today we want to thank the donors that have maintained and they continue to support the Sudanese refugees in our territory.
Peace talks between members of the Sudan Sovereign Council and several rebel groups began a little over a year ago in Juba to resolve the conflicts in Sudan. Earlier this month, a coalition of armed rebel groups reached a deal with Sudanese government officials on power sharing, security arrangement, and national issues. The framework agreement gives the parties a 39-month transitional period. Under the deal, opposition groups would get 3 seats in the 11-member Sovereign Council and 25% of positions in the executive branch and the National Assembly. The agreement also resolves land issues, the repatriation and compensation of returnees to their homelands, transitional justice and reconstruction of war-affected areas. It also states that ousted long-time Sudan President Omar al-Bashir will be handed over to the International Criminal Court. it did not specify when that would happen. For VOA News, I am Timo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Catholic Church in South Sudan opened its doors to worshippers over the weekend after the government banned social, political and religious gatherings to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The Catholic Metropolitan Archbishop of Juba says Catholic faithfuls will have to observe health guidelines to prevent the spread of COVID-19, which includes washing and sanitizing hands and wearing masks before attending any mass. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
It is like a Christmas day, or it is like the resurrection of Christ. Because all this period, you know, like I told you from childhood, we are used to come to this church. The church became part and partial of our bodies, spiritually. If you don't come here, you feel something is missing.
That is 56-year-old Sabina Doki Placido, a parishioner at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Juba, expressing her joy on Sunday after attending Mass for the first time since March. Hundreds of Catholic faithful sang Christian hymns as they worshipped at St. Joseph's Parish during Sunday's Mass. Several worshippers said the reopening of church services has meant their souls can once again be fed and nourished by the Holy Word. Rita Joanna Dimitri was another worshipper attending Mass at St. Joseph's.
I'd been waiting and longing for this day, actually, since last week when the parish priest announced that today we'll reopen the church. I was so grateful because I've been following the prayers online through Bahita Radio. And then when I pray, when it comes to the time whereby people receive the Holy Communion, I feel like I need to receive Jesus, the real Jesus. I need to receive the Holy Communion, but I couldn't.
Stephen Ameyo Martin, Metropolitan Archbishop of Juba Diocese, outlined new guidelines that congregants should observe during Sunday services.
All people will have masks, face mask, and all of them will have to wash their hands at the entrance. And then all the other social distancing protocols are all observed.
Catholic churches are offering more masses to ensure that fewer people attend each service, according to Archbishop Ameyo. Churches like Kator Parish, which used to have 3 masses, will now hold 6 masses to allow for social distancing. The Catholic Church leadership has also issued new guidelines for taking Holy Communion. A congregant will receive the host in his or her hand rather than in the mouth. The congregant will then move about a meter away, swallow the host, and walk away. Catholic faithful Doki says the new guidelines are to protect against spreading the coronavirus.
Before it, we are used to that, you lined up. You lined up, and then the priest gives the Holy Communion to you. He gives it with his own hand.
To your mouth.
To your mouth. But this time, it is not into your mouth because of the fear of the infection.
Archbishop Ameyo says congregants will be screened to determine if they have abnormal temperatures at the entrance into churches. Juan, who is also a member of the COVID-19 task force in the Catholic Church, says some congregants are yet to get used to the new guidelines.
Some people remove their mask because it actually causes, like, it suffocates, or sometimes it causes headache. That's why they're removing their mask. But we also inform them in the church today. It's only 40 minutes and then we'll be out of the church, and it is for their safety and for the safety of others.
Archbishop Ameyo says the church leadership has recognized the fact that the pandemic is still a threat to human life.
We will always monitor the infection of people. If the people are infected more and more, we could still, as I say, close down our churches.
Catholic Church leaders say mass time will be shorter than normal. A service that used to last 2 hours will now last no more than 1 hour. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at corruption during COVID-19 pandemic. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at Kenya's fight against COVID-19. The World Bank, IMF, and the Jack MA Foundation have contributed more than $2 billion to help Kenya's fight against COVID-19. But much of the money and donated medical supplies have gone missing, prompting President Uhuru Kenyatta to order an investigation into who might have taken it all. For VOA News, Lenin Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
These are some of the PPE kits.
Dr. Godwins Agutum is CEO of the Network Action Against Corruption, an organization sanctioned by the Kenyan government to promote fiscal accountability. The NAC accuses KEMSA, a government agency that supplies medicine and medical equipment to the Ministry of Health, of embezzling hundreds of millions of dollars meant for the COVID-19 battle. The network says officials in KEMSA ran multiple schemes. In one, NAC says the organization paid for personal protective equipment, or PPEs, that was actually donated by the Jack Ma Foundation. The money then went to phony companies controlled by the KEMSA officials. In another, NAC says KEMSA officials contracted with fictitious shell companies to supply protective equipment. No equipment was supplied, but the companies got paid anyway. Speaking to VOA, Dr. Agutu said the officials also planned to resell PPEs on the black market.
The PPE kits consist of a number of items. But you realize even these particular people, what they used to do, the PPE kits which they stole from Jack Ma's donation, they would break it down. So they have the coveralls separately, they have the boots separately, they have the supplied separately. So you can imagine how much were they intending to make out of that.
Kenya's President Kenyatta has ordered a forensic audit into the use of both state and donor funds meant to be used to combat COVID-19.
That all persons found to be prima facie culpable as a result of those ongoing investigations should be brought to book.
Caroline Gaita is the executive director at Mzalendo Trust, a parliamentary monitoring organization. Gaita says mismanagement of the money and protective gear is affecting Kenya's response to the coronavirus pandemic.
We've seen, even as we speak now, the level of preparedness for COVID is still not there yet. The isolation units that were meant to be put up are not ready. We've seen doctors complaining about lack of PPEs. So it would seem that we got these resources, but we have not used them for the right reason, and yet we will continuously pay for them.
Dr. Samuel Oroko is the national chairman at the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union. Oroko says the shortage of protective supplies coupled with the low quality of those made available is having far-reaching effects.
The doctors and the workers working in the outpatient department should be given N95 each and every day they see patients. Due to lack of enough and quality PPEs has led to more than almost 1,000 healthcare workers being infected with the coronavirus.
Kenya's Senate and investigative agencies have been tasked with unraveling the allegations of misappropriated funds. Meanwhile, the country's health ministry has recorded more than 36,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
Schools across Africa are slowly reopening after months of remote learning during the pandemic. But Zimbabwe's Teachers Union is resisting going back to the classroom and has rejected a call by the UN Children's Agency UNICEF for governments to reopen schools. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
On Tuesday, Mohamed Malik Fall, Regional Director for UNICEF in Eastern and Southern Africa, urged governments in the region to open schools closed earlier this year following an outbreak of coronavirus. Fall says the pandemic has caused an unprecedented education crisis over the last 7 months as radio and online learning methods are not reaching all the students. Some also lost the daily meals they were receiving at school. And that's not all, says Fall.
Lost learning hurts children and community. Teenage pregnancy and violence against children increase. Now we acknowledge the safe reopening of school will not be easy. And while the evidence shows children are not the main driver of the pandemic, there will be cases of COVID-19 in school. It will not be a practice in perfection, but it can be done with community commitment, government leadership, and investment.
South Africa, despite its large COVID-19 caseloads, reopened schools for all grades at the end of August. UNICEF says most countries in Eastern and Southern Africa have seen a first return to schools, starting with exam classes. In Zimbabwe, exam classes are scheduled to start next week, but that hangs in balance after the country's biggest teachers' union called for a strike unless their concerns are addressed. The teachers earn about $100 a month, including a $75 COVID-19 allowance introduced 2 months ago. They want an additional $500 to be above the poverty line. Sifiso Ndlovu, the head of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, says he's worried that UNICEF has not looked at his country's lack of preparedness to reopen schools.
The safety issues that we have been concerned about in the schools have not been met thoroughly as to guarantee safe and healthy reopening of schools without high incidence of COVID-19. Secondly, UNICEF seems to be oblivious that the learning conditions for students is also dependent on the working conditions of the teachers. And above all, it should be supported by sound budgetary support, even from UNICEF.
Amoni Murwira is Zimbabwe's Minister of Higher and Tertiary Education. He says the government allocated about $60,000 to ensure that when schools reopen, they are observing World Health Organization guidelines for COVID-19. Neighboring Zambia opened schools Monday. Via WhatsApp, Christopher Yalukanda from the Zambia National Union of Teachers said his organization is checking on the preparedness of schools after the over half a year long closures.
What we found in schools is that most of the children came back equipped with masks. The schools have already acquired some face masks, sanitizers, and also they have set up washing points within the school. In order to take care of social distancing, schools have divided or have a staggering timetable, which means that not all the learners will report to school the same day.
He said it was too early to conclude that Zambia has successfully reopened schools and is following WHO guidelines to contain the coronavirus. He said the teachers' union would go around the country to assess the situation. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Akaldu by David Pachong.
Penyinom. Ha ha. Ayinang Akaldu.
Penyinang Akaldu. Wawa.
We've been listening to David Pachong with the song Akaldu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.